ended up becoming a social media manager for Tangerine Bank. I actually launched Tangerine Hoops. Was still with MLSC. I was still doing the Hangout, but the Hangout wasn't enough to pay the bills. So I was working at CBC as an associate director, and that was paying my bills. So the 9 to 5 was Tangerine Bank, and then the 5 to 2:30 in the morning was CBC. And I had a 3-hour break during that CBC run. In that time, you could do whatever you want, just be back by 12. And my show for the Hangout happened at 11. So I would literally go from the CBC building, walk to Dome Productions, which is the Rogers Center, on my break, do a show for the Hangout, live to air. And then the moment that the show was done at 11:30, take my stuff, go back to CBC, do another CBC show, and then go to sleep. And then wake up the next morning at like 8:30 a.m. Yes. And I was taking an acting class at the same time.
You're going to have to work a lot, and you're not going to get
a lot. This industry is for hard workers.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not just going to coast and like walk your way. And like,
if you like sleep, don't work here.
So episode number 8 of the Sports Creative Showcase is here. I have a very special guest with me, an old friend, someone I've known for at least 5 years now, maybe a little longer.
Yeah, something around there.
We have Savannah Hamilton from Sportsnet, the Raptor sideline reporter, a former producer at MLSE, my former producer. She was technically my boss not too long ago. Here with us today to talk about everything she's been doing, from hosting the sideline reporting for the Raptors, creating shows for the Toronto Raptors a few years ago, creating Swish, the WNBA show here in for the NBA Canada. Savannah, how are you? Welcome to the Sports Creator Choice. Welcome to the show.
Oh my gosh, what an introduction. Shout out to the host already.
I have a really big critic here. She's actually a television host. I'm not a television host, so I'm a little nervous. All jokes aside, thank you for coming in. Thank you for sitting down to chat with us. I know we've been planning on doing this for a while, and it's just been like scheduling, and one of us has always been traveling, one of us has always been busy, but I'm glad to have finally got you here.
Yeah.
What have you been up to? What's new? Before we get into your story, what's the last few months been looking like for you?
Oh man. So last few months have been a little bit more lower key, I would say. Not completely off, no, but like just it's been the off season for the Toronto Raptors, mm-hmm. of course, and the NBA. So kind of like catching your breath again, basically, because it was a long season, and it's my first season, and I didn't know what to expect and learned a lot of things on the road and like just in that journey, in that time, in that space. So the past couple of months, I've really focused on just like being with family, reconnecting with friends, recharging for myself mentally, and just really letting that take priority on top of just like just doing things here and there, talking to students and like trying to give back where I can.
No, that's awesome. So getting into it here, obviously you are a sideline reporter at the Raptors. You've had a long experience here in the basketball world as a producer, as a, you know, on-air talent. Takes a lot out of you, takes a lot of your time, but you obviously have a passion for it. You and I met, I mean, how long ago did you graduate? I graduated 2 years ago.
That was like 2018.
So, I mean, we would have...
Wow,
we didn't even meet through school originally. You and I would have met through...
Yeah, through MLSE.
So for context for everyone listening, I was a video editor at MLSE for a few years, and then I met Savannah, and she was producing... What was that show called again? The one that was a
wrap up,
Raptors wrap up, and I became the editor for that show, and then you and I just kind of became friends right away. Like we immediately clicked.
Yeah,
and our friendship was kind of born from there. And over the last few years, like we've kind of just gone to each other for advice and like support as you know people in this industry, because you and I kind of have a very similar mindset in terms of how we look for opportunities and how we see networking in this kind of field. But I want to take it back here. Where did you get your start? Obviously, we could talk about everything about you being on air, being on Sportsnet for the Raptors. We were saying before the podcast, how crazy is it that like 3 or 4 years ago, we were both at MLSE and now here we are.
Yep.
You're a sideline reporter and I'm with the NHL doing completely different things that we thought Amazing. We would have done. Give me a little background in terms of like where you started and how you got into where you are now.
Well, first and foremost, I'm just so proud of you, Juan, because like this is a moment to get your flowers because you're literally living out your dream. And I remember you telling me like when we were both working for MLSE, like exactly what you wanted to do. You loved hockey like from day one. You weren't shy about that. Even though you're cutting a basketball show, you still let it be known that like, no, my true passion is hockey. I love basketball, but true passion is hockey. And then here you are like like one of the content creators, one of the main guys that the NHL uses that's literally sending you out to the finals, and that you're blocking off this time for me to record a podcast with you because, you know, the next day or two, like, you have to fly out. Yeah, so I think that's some incredible, like, what you've been able to do. And so, like, I'm just excited to be here.
But about you, but I appreciate that.
I mean, thank I have you, to give you your moment too, because I've thank seen you, so you. Much growth in your own you. Career. It's insane. Thank but you. What was the question again?
Yeah. So, like, take me back to where it started. Obviously,
yes.
Let's go yes. back to, I mean, as far as I know, you know, at Ryerson, we were both sport media RTA students. You were an athlete there. Take mm-hmm. me back to, like, the start. When did you realize you wanted to work in this industry and kind of the path you took, you know, an abbreviated path for however long you want to go from start to finish?
Okay, so a big thing that was always in my mind was when I was a student, I knew that you had to play the student card to get in the door. Because mm-hmm. after you graduate, you're probably already a little bit too late. Because you should be making contacts while you're a student, because you could always say, hey, I'm a student, I'm just trying to learn. But when you're graduating, you know, you're actually a professional now. Like, and if you don't have any experience because you didn't do anything in school, then you're already behind the eight ball, basically. And you don't have the student card to play anymore. So you can't just be like, can I come in?
You're like why? Everybody else. You yeah. have like, no, there's no like, oh, you're just learning, so sure.
Yeah, or like an internship opportunity. So I knew that I had to make the most out of my student card, basically, when I was still in school. So in my second year of university, I was able to job shadow somebody that I absolutely admired in the industry, Akil Augustine. He had a show called The Hangout. It was an NBA talk show. And when I job shadowed him, I literally said to him, like, you can't say this now because it's not even a thing anymore. But I said, hey, listen, I loved it so much. I will come on and like work for free on the show. Just let me know whatever you need. Like, I would sweep the floors. Like, and then, and he was like, okay, cool. Come to the production meeting like next week. And that's literally how I got my first step into the industry. And I wasn't even working for free for that long, to be honest, because like I would come into the production meeting. I would at first I was very quiet. I'd like sit and listen and observe. But then I started taking notes, and then we kind of came like an assistant writer in these like production meeting like stuff and sending the notes to the producer afterwards, et cetera, et cetera. But then shortly after that, there was a need in the studio for a whole different show. It was for the Toronto Maple Leafs pre and post game show and the Toronto Raptors pre and post game show, where they're like, we need an associate director. We only have one right now, and she can't do everything. So that's kind of where they looked at me like, hey, kid, can you do math? And I was about to be like, absolutely not. But then I was gonna say,
we come into this industry to not do math.
Yeah.
And then people are like, you do math? I'm like, no.
Yeah, right. I was gonna say no.
I don't want to do it.
One of my mentors who ended up being a mentor to me in this industry, Dwayne Watson, like, he literally looked at me in that moment. He's like, lie. And I was like, yeah, I know how to do math.
I love math. It's faking it till you make it. That's all it can be at times. Sometimes you gotta be like, yeah, I can do that. Well, you have no idea what to
exactly. do. And little did I know, like, that lie, which I ended up saying, like, yes, you figured it out, by the way. Like, you're like, I lied, but then I figured it out anyways, because it was just time math, right? Like, if you could back count and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, that lie ended up paying my bills literally from that day to like 3 years after that day, basically, to like post-graduation. So, because I ended up getting a job with CBC as an associate director for like the news, like nationally and everything, and like also locally. And so like, and CBC paid well enough, so I was able to stay in Toronto and just like, you know, it all kind of worked out. So that was like my real start, was saying yes to like doing anything for a show. But like once again, nowadays, everything has to be paid. There's paid internships. But the second yes was, or basically a lie, that I could do math. And that ended up like actually like keeping me afloat in this industry for the time being. But and then that yes to the show of doing anything ended up like leading me to producing. So at one point, there's like a time where, like, you know, when Dwayne, the producer of the show, couldn't make it, he would let me step in and completely take control of the show. And he had like full confidence in me. But that was built over like the next couple of years.
You took a risk.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. So by the time I graduated school, I was already producing a show. Like,
which is insane to think, like, the growth, like that growth from just being a student saying, hey, I will literally do anything you want me to clean. And then now you're running the show. But like, I think that's just like, that just shows you that you kind of just need to put yourself in scenarios that you might be uncomfortable with.
Absolutely.
And like that, like, multiplies itself down the line into like getting these opportunities. And that was like relatable to me when I started at MLSC. Mm-hmm. I remember the first video they asked me to make, there was like an all-star video for the Leafs, like in 2018 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're like, this is what we want it to look like. And they showed me an example and they're like, do you think you can do that? And I'm like, yeah. And then like fully well knowing like, no, I don't, I was shocked at the moment that I got the job. Like yeah. I was like 20 years old and I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? And then I did it and like, this is great. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
But I get that. I get like 100%. You kind of have that moment of like, oh fuck, here we go. Like they're going to find out I'm a fraud, but you just make it work. And yeah. I think people in this industry who are successful, like
yeah.
you figure out a way to swim.
Like yes. Not
just, it's you're throwing yes. the water, it's sink or swim. And those who really want it will fucking swim.
They
anyways.
Will swim and you'll probably get a lot of water in your mouth while you do it, while you're learning yeah. in the
beginning.
Might
get a little tired.
Might get a little tired, might drown a little bit. But like at the end of it, like you'll come out alive. Mm-hmm. And then you become a stronger swimmer.
Okay, so you obviously gained the trust of Dwayne during this. And he's a very yeah. big person in your career. Someone who's very obviously very pushed you throughout your career. Mm-hmm. And we talked about how school is a really good way to network with people. In your experience, like how important was it for you to build that network in the early days? You mentioned like that student card. When you're out of school, no one really gives you a look.
This, exactly.
How important, and this is something I stress like on the podcast and also on my YouTube channel. It's like, I don't get my jobs just by being a good videographer. And I'm sure it's the same. Mm-hmm. You don't get your jobs just by being good on air. You're amazing on it, but mm-hmm. it's really a lot of the times who you know as well and who can connect mm-hmm. you and who can put you in the right spots. Can you talk a little bit about like how you use your network in those early years mm-hmm. to then put you in the place to like, you know, eventually develop Wrap Up and then also something like Swish, which mm-hmm. led to where you are now. How important was it developing your network and what was that process for you like? Like, how did you do it?
It's funny because it's not even just like who you know, it's like how well you know them too mm-hmm. and like how much they like you or trust you. And like, you know, they're the decision makers in the industry and there's not many decision makers because, you know, the funnel gets tighter and tighter and tighter. So like you have to maintain a good reputation. You have to work hard. Like word of mouth in this industry goes flying around too. So like, you know, you just gotta be a good person. Like yeah. honestly, like be a good person goes really far in the industry, just that alone. But
and I think people forget about that. And
literally.
I think as you get deeper into the industry
yeah.
and you get accolades and your ego grows a little bit, like yeah. people forget like you like genuinely like they're not, if you're a good person, mm-hmm. everyone will wanna work with you.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think so, that's like why you and I connected. Cause I'm like,
yeah.
you thought I was like, we just got along really well. And I feel like and that's a good example of
yeah.
it. You know what I mean? Like, just being a good person goes a long way versus like going in with an ego and then people like don't want to work with you, right?
Absolutely. I think like hustler recognizes hustler, you know, like mm-hmm.
yeah, yeah.
So
game recognized game, you
game
know?
Recognized game always. Anyways, but yeah, so I think for me, actually the building actually started back in high school. Like there was an opportunity when I was in my last year of high school I was covering a magazine and Tristan Thompson at the time was playing for the Cleveland Cavaliers and it was his homecoming. Like it was the first time he was coming back to Toronto in a Cavs jersey or whatever. Exciting times. Mm. So they sent me to go there and like just go on the scrum, cover it, write an article afterwards. And so, yeah, I was actually a writer at one point too.
Woman of many talents.
In this industry, you gotta wear everything.
No, you have
to,
and like,
you have to know a little bit of everything.
I was just saying, like, I am like looking at the audio here and like making sure everything's running because like you're wearing every single hat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, anyways, go on.
See, it's exactly
it's like, the same thing.
Literally, this
except
podcast
it's not Tristan
is brought to you
it's
by Juan, who's doing audio, hosting, producing,
camera
ops.
But
yeah.
Tristan Thompson in high school.
Yeah, so anyway, so had to go on a scrum, like interview him. And I was like in the locker room and I was like, whoa, this is crazy. But like at the same time, I also knew that my media peers were around me. And mm-hmm. so I was already following media like personalities and writers at the time. So a big one that stood out to me was Michael Grange. And so I almost like made it my mission when I was there to like at least introduce myself. So I think I did back then. So that's grade 12, right? Come in university. Now I run into Michael Grange like many times and then like just throughout like different university networking events that sport media would like put on. And like he remembered me. He was always remembering me, stuff like that, right? And the funny thing is that like it's not even that like he could per se like do anything immediately to help my career, nothing. He didn't give me a job himself, but like now he's a colleague of mine, you know, and we have like, I have a good taste
in
my mouth.
That's wild to think that you went up to him in high school.
Yeah.
And now you're working with him. It's crazy.
I had a very surreal moment this year when I was like doing the women's game and I was like right on camera with him. Cause I used to watch the 3-point Grange, like that report.
Like a lot.
And I love the 3-point Grange, like that segment. And so to be next to him, I was like, oh my goodness, this is crazy.
It's also, you look up to these people.
Yeah.
And I had these moments like over the last year. It's just like, there's some people you like look up to. And then you get to this point, you're kind of like, I'm not looking up at you anymore. Yeah, I'm like, I'm eye level.
Yes. You know what I mean? I have so much respect for you, but I could see you at eye level. I'm here too. I'm here right now
I'm
too.
I'm with you exactly. here because I worked to get here. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So
that's an amazing feeling.
Absolutely. So yeah. So, I mean, I feel like I've said this story a few times, but like I had a knee injury and that knee injury ended up being one of the best things for me because I was playing basketball. Being a student athlete is very demanding, but when you have an injury, you can't play basketball. And so luckily my coach was a bit more flexible. And this is like something I would give her a lot of credit
for. Shout out Carly.
Carly Clark. Is because she let me like, kind of like, okay, like I can't practice cause I just had knee surgery. So can I go to the studio and like time out a show or like can I go produce something because like I could do something within my degree in that time space. And so that's kind of like how I started getting my way into the industry, was just kind of like meeting people at these networking events or just even like within the industry. I also started my own radio show at TMU, formerly Ryerson, on Spirit Live Radio,
as everyone did.
And I would invite guests to come like in on the show. So, and that was my way of actually like interviewing them, but then also just building that relationship. So if I met them one time, I would try to get them immediately on the show. And of course you play the student card. And the student card's like, can you just help a poor student? Like, you know, like,
yeah.
I just want to interview you, please. Like, you know, anyways. And then like, and they're like, yes, of course. Yeah, exactly. In a British accent. And they're like, yes, of course I can, of course. So we end up getting like Jamie Campbell on the show. I think we got Michael Grange on the show. We got Dwayne on the show. And I'm just like building and making stronger connections. Exactly. And then you start really focusing on what you're doing, of course, because it's not just like networking. It's like your own body of work too has to show for it. Because you can know everybody, you can have great relationships with everybody, but they might not take you serious if you're not bringing anything to the table.
Yeah.
So
you need to show that you're actually serious about it. You're
not exactly, just not there to like swoon everybody.
Yeah, you're not trying to chum up. You're like putting in the work.
Exactly. So yeah. So then, by the time like I was graduated, like I had a lot of great connections, and also your professors are connections too, because like they have worked in the industry themselves, and I was like really good, like had a really good student relationship with like the head of the program, Joe Recuprio. And he was the one who actually recommended me to go to CBC to get the associate producer job, which ended up paying my bills. Like, so, cause he like, sorry, associate director job. Anyway, so like that, it all kind of ties into each other. And like, you just, once again, be a good person. Like, I get that you're not going to like everybody, but you got to respect everybody.
Don't burn bridges.
And try not to burn bridges.
Because it's a small industry. And people remember.
In Canada, it's really small.
Yeah, and people remember
everything.
Faces and everything.
Everything.
This is something that like I talk about a lot. Well, I have spoken a lot like on my own channels and on my own kind of things. It's like going to school for me was never about getting good grades.
Yeah.
It was always about meeting and getting myself in the right room with people.
Yeah.
For people who are younger and looking to get into this line of work, whether it's producing, directing, being on air, do you think, give me your honest opinion, do you think going to school is a good idea these days, or can you make do without it? I just want your opinion.
Yeah, this is a very like,
it's a touchy subject because people are like,
topical one.
Because I went to the same program as you. Like, yeah. We went to school together. And I will tell you, you don't need school.
Yeah.
But I also am a hypocrite because without the people I met in school, I'm not here at all.
Yeah. I think so. The way I look at school is less about what you're learning in school and more about the connections that school can bring you. Mm. And like, that means like the alma mater, right? Like, cause you go into the industry now and you say, I'm from RTA. It's literally like a calling card.
Everyone knows.
It's like, oh, RTA, gold stamp. Like, you know, it's like, oh, you, I know exactly what program. That program has existed from like, I don't know, like back in the day. Literally, like our professors were in RTA.
Yeah.
And so like, that's like almost a certification to itself. So, and then on top of the fact that, like, because there's so many people that have gone through that program that work in the industry now, like, they're going to come back, they're going to talk to you, blah, 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 blah. Like, literally, one of my professors was, like, one of the vice presidents of TSN, you know? And, like, and that was literally my prof on, like, a Thursday night at 7 o'clock. So, there's just so much, like, the value in that aspect. What I've learned in sport media itself, like, I probably use maybe... like, literally 10%.
Yep.
Like, and that's the part that I'm like, you don't
need school. And that's not bashing the program. School. It's not that's bashing. Just like the fact of the matter is like we work now in parts where like
yeah.
that skill set we learn in broadcasting.
And also we've honed in so much.
Yeah, and we know exactly yeah. what we want
to
do.
And they, and at the end of the day, school's meant to be a bit more broad because like when you're catering to 75 different people with 75 different interests, and like to be quite honest, like 60 of the 75 are probably gonna like divert into another industry, like you have to keep it generic enough that appeals to everybody, but you can't get specific because I like all my on-air stuff that I learned was way more in the industry itself than it was in school. Like in school, I probably had literally like 3 or 4 on-air opportunities like to like host something. And I then, but then the thing is that I also had to create my own opportunities and I really had to push and raise my hand because, and that goes into a whole different conversation about like representation because obviously being a Black female, like there's not a whole lot of us on TV, especially like in the Canadian landscape. Like there's starting to see more diverse faces now, but like 10 years ago, even there was like none.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, so when I was like telling my classmates, I want to be on air, they weren't thinking of me first, you know?
Yeah.
And so that goes into a whole deeper conversation, but like, that's why I was also forced to make my own opportunities. That's why I did a radio show.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I making your own opportunities is like a completely different part of the battle that you can do with or without school. But I think that's like that's a big thing. It's understanding that like positions like where you are now came with a lot of work, a lot of like literal like at times blood, sweat and tears. Like it is like the fruits of your labor have come over a process. Like I think this goes on to one thing I want to talk about, which is like this whole thing of working in the sports world, whether it's broadcasting, creative, like whatever. It's not going to happen overnight.
No.
And I think we're taught really early on that like, well, you go into it with the thought that like, oh,
yeah,
4 years, I'm good. And then you get in, you're like, oh no, like, it's not like, oh shit. Like I am a little fish in a big pond. And it's like,
big pond.
But I think that's something worth noting too, for like younger people. It's just like, just because you graduated school and didn't get a job right off that, that's fine. Like this is like a slow burn. Like you're not going to get a job like this. Right. And it's also like incredibly competitive, but I want to segue here.
Yeah.
So you started working, you got through into MLSE with the Raptors through Akil.
Yep.
Then you met Dwayne and then you became an associate producer. Was it an associate producer or director? Yeah.
And associate director.
And so you both multiple hats.
Both hats.
So you did that. And then, so how do you segue then into becoming like a main producer when by this time I would have met you very shortly after? Yeah. What was like the next few years? Like, you know, you grinded out as the AD and the AP, worked your tail off while being an athlete. What was the next kind of like step in your journey from there?
I graduated by this point. And I was like thinking to myself, I'm like, okay, like this is crazy. Like what now? So ended up becoming a social media manager for Tangerine Bank. I actually launched, Tangerine Hoops.
I didn't even know you did this.
Yeah.
This is deep.
Yeah, this is deep.
This is a deep, this is like a playbook way back when.
Yeah. I launched Tangerine Hoops with Tangerine when that was first happening. And then I literally like helped them in the thing, brainstorm, even like Fan Angle, what you see today. Like I was in those meetings. So like, anyway, so like, so that was, a piece that I ended up using to when I went back to MLSE. So I was still with MLSE. I was still doing the hangout, but the hangout wasn't enough to pay the bills. So I was, working at CBC as an associate director. And that was paying my bills. But on top of the fact that I had a 9 to 5 and then the 9 to 5 was Tangerine Bank. And then the 5 to 2:30 in the morning was CBC. And I had a 3-hour break during that CBC run, where it, like in the middle, because we had a show at like 9 and the next show was at like 1 a.m. So in that time, you could do whatever you want, just be back by 12. And my show for the hangout happened at 11. So I would literally go from the CBC building, walk to Dome Productions, which is the Rogers Center, on my break, do a show for the hangout live to air. And then the moment that the show was done at 11:30, take my stuff, go back to CBC, do another CBC show, and then go to sleep, and then wake up the next morning do at like 8:30 a.m. Yes.
And go to school.
And go to school. No, no, no. I was graduated this time. So I was just had like three jobs. And I was taking an acting class at the same time. So like...
It's funny because we talk about like just before how much of a grind this like line of work is now. Yeah. And that's with one job that you have right now. And like me. And then I'm also the same. Like before I graduated, I was working three different jobs.
Yeah.
And like that's another thing like to put out there for younger people. It's just like you're going to have to work a lot and you're not going to
get... A lot. This industry is for hard workers.
Yeah, yeah. You're not just going to coast and like walk your way. And like you're
if
gonna,
you like sleep, don't work here.
Yeah, yeah, no. It's, so it's like I didn't even know that. That like
nobody knows that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Until it's too late.
That, until this comes out. Now everyone's like, oh my gosh.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So you, how long did you do that grind for?
Oh, I did it for a year and a half to almost 2 years, I think. And then the door kind of opened where Tangerine, they offered me a contract again to like do the social media. They want to renew it. But for me, I had to like really like be like, this is too much work. I'm doing too much. And like also the job itself was really demanding. And it just didn't equate to the way, and it was also up in North York. I would have to commute a lot more and stuff like that. So
sucks.
Blah blah. So I just said, you know what, I'm gonna put a pause here. I'm not gonna take the next contract. Which you have to learn how to say no in this industry, which is the hardest thing.
Which is crazy because at first you're saying yes to everything, and then you're like, oh, I have to say no.
I gotta say no to things for the sake of my mental health.
Yeah, 100%. Like, yeah.
Anyways, and so said no.
Your physical health, like physical getting health sleep, your social life, like everything.
I was getting sick so much.
Oh, I know.
It was insane.
Yeah.
But so get this. This is the crazy part, right? This is the magical movie moment. So I said no to that contract, having no backup plan other than I'm going to work at CBC. And that's going to be enough to pay my bills, but it's definitely not enough as what I was making before.
I'll figure it out.
Why did that week the Raptors offer me an on-air job to do wrap up? Because I pitched wrap up like before, and they're like, "Yeah, but we're gonna green light it."
When it rains, it pours.
Like when
I got offered the NHL job, you know that I got another job offered literally that week.
Yes,
and I'm like, ah. I wonder. But it's like I think I also chose to like you when you take a step forward and you like say yes or no. It's like the whole thing about like everything has an equal and opposite reaction.
Yeah,
like you saying no to something open a door to something else, and like. I think that's really important to note too for anyone listening. It's just like, don't be afraid. If you think you're going to set yourself back from saying no to something, you're actually opening your time and your energy to a completely different opportunity that you never knew what it
can. I feel like you put your trust in yourself and you put your trust in honestly, like the universe, God, whatever you believe in. And like, things just work out.
Yeah.
Like I'm serious. Like it's actually insane. So like I quit that Tangerine job with no real backup plan of how I'm going to like make up for that money. That week I get an offer from MLSC to be a host on contract for social media, which also then evolved because they knew I had all this producing experience from the past. It actually ended up evolving into, hey, we also need an associate producer, like a legit, like on contract type of thing. And I was like, done. And then when I got that contract, I was getting paid per gig and I was hustling every producer. I was like, let me on your project. And like, there's so many projects. And as somebody who later became like a full-time producer, like I would take any help that I could get. So a hungry AP was like, yes, come on my project. I need you right now. Like, and I was just doing paperwork and organization and scripts and this. And I was like, I did like documentaries, features, live productions,
everything,
and like music videos. Like literally you name it, I've probably done something of a project on it. And like, so that was like the biggest blessing, just because like, you know, it all came at the same time. And so that was kind of where the gears started to like switch up until COVID. Mm-hmm. And then COVID happened and all of a sudden it was a really unsure time because
we would have met 2020
2019 and wrap up launched
and that
December
was like and that was your baby.
Yes,
that was like your thing that you
I pitched, I think, blah blah. I had a great producer working with me, Tony Francis, and so like, but like that, we launched wrap up 2019 December, and then COVID happened March 2020. I forgot 2020.
How close it was.
So we only had eight episodes.
Yeah, we didn't get, I kind of forgot that it was that. I thought we worked on it for a year. I'm like, right? No, we worked on it for like 4 months, 5 months, and then the world ended.
For real. That's crazy. For real. And also shout out to like your editing skills on that, because like literally you made it almost look like a TikTok before TikTok was even like TikTok.
TikTok didn't exist.
It didn't. It was like musically. Like,
yeah.
And so, but we had that like TikTok vibe to it. Like, which is like, we're just ahead of our time. One.
Yeah.
But anyways, so
I mean, you're the one with like 100,000 TikTok followers.
Well,
go follow her.
Stop. Stop. at Savannah Hamilton 11.
Links will be down in the description below.
But yeah, so then COVID happened just as they were. So COVID happened the week that MLSC said, hey, we need a sideline reporter for the 905. We want to give you a shot. And I was so nervous. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to mess it up. I don't want to mess it up, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, I was also like so excited because I was like, finally, like this is like what I wanted to do.
This is exactly what I wanted.
Yeah. And then, sorry, game's canceled. Everything's canceled. COVID shut down the world. And then all my like shifts at CBC, all the shows I was doing, they all went to a bare minimum. They just did one national show. So now you had like an oversupply of ADs. Because we couldn't leave our house,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so then now I went from having a ton of work to almost no work. I was literally working once a week at CBC, and thank God you gotta save money in this industry, because like you don't know,
COVID doesn't stop you from paying rent.
Exactly, right? Oof, now we got some SERP checks in there though.
Yeah, we all did.
So they blessed us a little bit, but still not enough to like continue. But anyways, and so I ended up
making TikToks in my bedroom.
making TikToks in my bedroom for one. And then two, the second biggest blessing was MLSE decided to hire me full time. Like before it was gig to gig. Like I was saying, I was trying to be on every project to get paid. And now this time it was completely full time job, benefits, everything.
The whole nine yards.
Because what happened during COVID, when everybody was at home, the only thing they had was a screen. And what goes on screens? Content and people. Yeah. And so that's why our industry almost like took a boom during COVID,
because people were like, wow, can we entertain people?
Yes. And that's why like I got the full-time job at MLSE, and my official title was host and producer. And here's the thing, I negotiated the host title in there, because that was originally, it was gonna be full-time producer, but I was like, no, I want hosting to be in it.
Yeah. I love that, because I think a lot of people in this industry, so yeah. Again, this is the show and the channel are geared towards younger people, or people who want to, not just young people who are trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people always just like take what they are given.
Yeah.
You are like one of the first people I said, you're like one of the first people I know who was given something and you were like, yes, but I want one more thing. Like you used your leverage.
You have to.
And that's awesome. Like, and like, that's really rare. Cause like, I feel like anyone else would be like, yeah, I'll take the full-time job benefits. Like, give me that. Like yeah. I secured it. But you were like, if you want me, you got to sweeten the pot. What led you to like, it's a risk.
It was a risk.
Right? And cause they could just be like, fuck you. Like, yeah. See you later. We'll go to someone else wants it. What led you to kind of like, do that?
Which the crazy part was also like CBC before the pandemic, they were pushing me to go full-time with CBC, and like the pay for CBC was like in what I was doing, and like at the level like what I did for CBC was essentially what I do now but behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Like at that scale, and so the pay was great, but I didn't like the job. Like that's why I tell people, don't get good at something you don't want to do, because the money's gonna entice you and keep on enticing you. So I actually had to take a step back in terms of like necessarily pay grade basically. But now it's like, okay, you take a step, I call it like you take a step back to reshift the slingshot, because you're gonna pull it back and you make sure it's going in the direction that you want to go in, instead of.
You can't get consumed by like the money and the
exactly.
job. You really have to understand that like there's more to it. And yes. I love that saying, it's like, don't become good at something you don't want to do, because then you'll be stuck in the rabbit hole.
Exactly. And then next you know, you're going to be 10 years in the rabbit hole. Oh, but I always wanted to be a reporter.
But now you're too old, too, or you're old, like, there's some whatever.
I can't
like,
tell you how many people told me when I was working like behind the scenes, you just be lucky that you have a job in television. I'm like, yeah, but it's not the job I want. It's a job in television, which I like, but the job I want is to be a reporter and a host, and I want to tell stories. And they're like, well, you know, that's really hot. It's really tough. And it's like really hard, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, well, I'll figure it out. And like, anyways, so taking the job for host and producer like it was a little, it was a small sacrifice, but like I knew down the road it would pay off. Yeah. And I mean,
it did.
Hi. Yeah. Yeah,
you're on TV. You're on national television.
And it's like the pay's not bad.
Yeah. No, and that's good. And I think at the end of the day, like you get the bag and the job and it just like, but I do really relate to like, you know, you need to have kind of an idea of what you want, the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And that's the same with me. Like right now I'm a content producer and a video editor, but like I want to be a content like a creative director one day.
Yeah.
Like you need to have kind of that bigger mindset of like what else is beyond. And this was the question I had lined up for later, but I think this is a good time to bring it up. Like you've gone from like the bottom of the barrel and then you got this big break and then you became a producer at MLSE and like you had the CBC thing. And then even though you're like, you're working with the Raptors, like that's a big deal, especially when you're coming out of university, like at least in Toronto, that's one of the biggest things you can do, but you weren't satisfied. You were like, what else is next? And then you're like, okay, on air host and producer for like the 905. And then, you're not satisfied with that. Okay. Sportsnet. Like, what is it that drives you to keep going for the next big thing? And not like, you don't get complacent. Yeah. You're like the least complacent person I know. Like you don't get satisfied with it. Like you want something bigger every time. When you catch that fish, you're like, what's the next bigger one? What drives you to keep getting that next big fish in your career?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that, you gotta smell the roses sometimes.
Yeah, you need to like enjoy your wins.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy your wins and enjoy where you are at, like in the present. But I think what drives me is that like from day one, like, and I mean when I was 16 years old, like I had a vision, like not a vision, but like I had a vision. Like no, I had a dream. Like I had a dream of like I want to be a sideline reporter or host, and like I want to tell stories, and like I want to do it on like the largest scale that I can, because I feel like I could reach a lot of people. And I feel like, you know, if I'm able to talk to somebody and empower their voice, because sometimes people have a hard time telling their own story, kind of like what you're doing to me right now, then, you know, I feel like there's value in that. I feel like I could bring that. I feel like I have storytelling to offer to the world. And so for me, it's like, how can I get there? Like, how can I take my career and like essentially like climb up the small steps, because it's very small steps and it feels like it's stagnant at times, in order to like to achieve that. So when you have the bigger picture in mind, I think this is almost like the biggest blessing and almost a curse at the same time too, is when you know what you want to do, and it's just a matter of like getting from A to Z. And so, but the thing is, oftentimes we don't know how to get from A to Z, because I mean, Z seems so far. But you know, if you are able to break it down into steps and like just understand, and also look at people in your industry that have done something similar or they're already at Zed, and you look back at their career, how did they get there? And so, for example, like I love Roz Gold, like Roz Gold and Wade, like she's amazing. And so she was somebody I followed on Instagram. I followed her career, and I noticed that her path was, she was a G League sideline reporter for the Warriors. And then she became the Warrior sideline reporter. And then now she's like...
And you literally took that same path. Same
route. I also noticed it with like other reporters. Like there's Malika Andrews, for example. She was a writer. She didn't go to the G League, but she was a writer. And then she became an NBA reporter. And then she became where she's now having her own show on like NBA Countdown and stuff like that. Like, so, you know, there's just like... You just kind of notice patterns and trends of where people, like how people move in the industry, and you're like, okay, I think this is the next step. This has to be the next step. And so I feel like it keeps you focused.
Yeah, you see how people have progressed.
Yeah,
yeah, and it keeps you like dialed in.
Exactly. So I think that's what drives me ultimately, is that, like, you know, it sounds so cliche, but like I do want to change the world. And I think,
I think we all have that ambition to a certain, you know what I mean? Like in your own certain way. Like, I don't think that's cliche. I think like, you know, your purpose is bigger than what your purpose is bigger than just being looking at camera and being like, so Pascal Siakam at 34 points.
Exactly.
Like there's a bigger reason. And that's awesome that you can recognize that. Cause I think, like you said, there are some people who are like, you're lucky to have a job in television. Mm-hmm. Like you should be happy. People get complacent. People don't want to take risks. And then it's just like, they're really just working for that. But you're working because they're like big picture. You're meant for something bigger.
That's why
Yeah. And that's a good, I think that makes your journey a lot more like, it brings a lot more like, just like a different magnifying glass or something like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Actually, that's a little bit why like I have TikTok. If you mentioned my TikTok of a of my crazy following. You're so funny.
I mean, it's but like that's a whole other thing. Like this is a content creator. Like
it's a content creating industry.
Like whether and this is like the thing. Like you're such a unique guest for me to bring on because you aren't like you aren't a videographer. You're not an editor. You're not like someone who does Photoshop. You are telling stories, and this is part of the thing I want to talk about. Like you're a storyteller on your right. Whether it was writing in your early days. Mm-hmm. Or then producing shows and telling the story from start to finish and like, or being on camera on the sideline. What's the story for this game? Da-da. You're a storyteller in your own right. So
there's
I think
so many ways that's to tell the a bigger, story.
That, and there's so many ways to tell a story. Yeah. But I think like that is like, you want to change the world by telling stories. Like it kind of goes full circle, right?
Yes. And actually I will say this. I do know how to mess around with some Photoshop and some Premiere Pro. Right. Listen, I got into the industry through Final Cut.
Okay.
That's actually legit. Right. High school, grade 10. Did well in that class. Okay. Anyway, actually, that was one of the indicators that I knew I was meant for media too.
So she literally can do it. So you're going to edit this whole podcast. I'm just going to give you everything. I'm kidding.
I don't like doing work.
That's why I'm here. So can we, let's take a second here and kind of get back on track in terms of like, so COVID happened.
Yep.
You became the 905 reporter. Mm-hmm. You did that kind of as COVID came and went. How did you end up getting in touch with Sportsnet? Because I think the next big leap is getting the gig where you're now on national television for almost every other Raptors game.
Yeah.
Talking on camera and doing your thing. How did they get in touch with you? What was that process like of like getting that ball rolling to now become the on-air? Because at this point, you've been doing on-air stuff for 3 years or so, but just not on that big spotlight stage in that sense. So how did that... What's the short story there? Like shorten the story there. How did you get from
A to Z?
Well, at this point, we're like on H to like
K.
X, like whatever.
I don't know my alphabet.
You don't know math. You don't know the alphabet. But how did you get there? How did you end up moving into that position? How did they open it up for you, or what was the situation?
Yeah, you know what they say that there's a little bit of luck in the industry, and I truly believe that too, for sure.
I've heard you have to be lucky to be good. But you have to be good to be lucky. Like it kind of it works in a cycle.
It's a cycle. And I think a part of that is just always being prepared, always being ready. And also, if you're not ready, then do it scared.
Yeah.
And do it like
jump into the deep end
and learn to swim to bring it full circle.
Lots of swimming references.
We love to swim. Anyway, so the big break really happened when I did a G League season covering the 905. That went pretty well, I thought.
You got on ESPN.
I was on ESPN. I forgot about that. You posted
that photo with the ESPN box, and I'm like, damn, okay, she's too big for me now.
ESPN. My
bad. So you had that experience. You got to be on ESPN.
That was fun. Yeah, that was super cool. Actually, thank you for reminding me. I totally forgot about that. And covering the G League playoffs. And then after that, it kind of lended itself to Scarborough Shooting Stars, who were opening up a new franchise. And I wasn't sure.
For context for people, that's Canadian Elite Basketball League, kind of a pro league way if you're in Canada, but continue on.
It's kind of, it's like literally think about like the NBA Summer League or like even like NBA G League, but like.
Just Canadians.
But just Canadian like.
Franchises.
Franchise in the summertime. Mm-hmm. So a new franchise was opening called the Scarborough Shooting Stars, and Drake was like really promoting it. His like really good friend Nico, he was one of the runner, like people who ran it. Another man named Sam, who's super cool. Like he was also somebody who was also running it. And people were like, yo, Sav, you need to get on this. You need to get on this. And I wasn't sure how I felt, to be quite honest, at first, because I was like, my summertime. Like I was also like, at this point, like I was hustling so hard. I was so tired like last summer. So I was like, I don't know if I want to put another thing on my plate, but I was like, you know what? Let me just see where this goes. And so, and I also got really good advice from my mentor, Dwayne. And he's like, Sav, you know, Scarborough Shooting Stars, they move differently. You got to jump on it. And I'm like, okay, fine. I'll be on it. And then sure enough, I took the job. A week later, they announced that J. Cole's on the team. And I was like, oh,
that's the universe.
I guess it's good that I took this magic dust from the universe.
Oh, you took this? You're going to talk to J. Cole now.
Yeah, literally.
Jermaine Cole.
Cole World. So
this is the part in the video where I pull up her interview with Jermaine Cole. Like there's footage of this girl with J. Cole. Anyways, go on. So
listen, the crazy part about that is the fact
that. Is that like the craziest thing you've done in your career is talk to J. Cole on about like sideline?
Probably, because like I don't know why. Like it's funny because I'm very much in the moment. So like if you're a celebrity, like I don't even see you as a celebrity. Like I just see you as like, oh,
because you work with basketball players all the time.
And this is like, and like also J. Cole is super cool. He's like, no, just call me Cole. Like don't even call me J. Cole. Like it's just Cole. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, hey, Cole. Like, you know, I was like, it sounds like such a regular name. Like, I actually knew a Cole growing up. I'm like, hey, Cole. Like, anyways. And so, so I had like a sit down interview with him before the interview that actually went out. So I had actually, it wasn't my first interview with him, but the first one just didn't come out. Cause like I sat down with every single person on the team for marketing day content, but like none of the interviews from that marketing day ended up being released for whatever reason. I don't know. I'm not going to ask, like, it's fine, whatever. Like, that stuff happens all the time in our industry.
Yeah.
You can make something, it could be perfect, and then it doesn't get released. It doesn't see the light of day. Anyways, and so I wasn't really that nervous the second time I was interviewing him. And I knew that, like, I had a mission with that whole thing. Anyways, ended up getting the opportunity to interview him. And this time it got released. And I think that was almost like the cherry on top of everything, on top of the fact that like I covered NBA Summer League that year. I actually went to New York. I was in the ESPN studios.
That was the summer NBA of SAF.
That was last year was crazy.
Summer of SAF.
Yeah, I was like, all right. I'm like,
Every time I texted you, you were like, oh, I'm in New York. I'm in Vegas. I'm like, what the
fuck? Right? So New York, Vegas, and then Scarborough Shooting Stars. The people who ran the Shooting Stars, amazing, like low, amazing, everybody. Mm-hmm. So I honestly think that just threw it over the top. So like between the Summer League interviews, like interviewing NBA rookies and stuff, and like the J. Cole interview and just like getting my reps up. And then I ended up working for CBC on camera during the CEBL playoffs. And then I ended up becoming the award host, like for the award show. For the CEBL, like later that August. So like everything was just kind of like spinning up into falling into place. And then sure enough, and like, here's the thing is that there was no opening for the Raptors job for SportsCenter or nothing. Like everybody was booked. And then, of course somebody like, so the woman who's doing my job before, she's so lovely. Her name's Amy. She got an opportunity in the States, in Miami. And that's where she used to go to university, and she couldn't pass it up because her dream job is to be an analyst. And she was a sideline reporter here. So once again, this is her path to choose. And so she was like, well, I'm going to choose being an analyst, you know? So that actually ended up opening up the sideline stuff. And that coincidentally fell in line when Sportsnet was like, hey, we want to start to give Savannah some like real reps, like in the studio, on a desk. Like we want to kind of like start really like honing her in.
Yeah.
And they gave me opportunity to cover the FIBA Women's World Cup, which was happening in Australia, but we were broadcasting it from Toronto. So I had a lot of shows that started at 1 a.m. One show started at 4 a.m. You got to be in the studio like an hour or two before. Your internal
clock is just completely reversed.
You got to keep up with the news. You got to see everything. Oh, my goodness. So at the end of that stretch of games, finally FIBA was done. The next day I get a call and they offered me the job for sideline reporting. Did you want to be a sideline reporter for the Toronto Raptors?
What was your first reaction?
So the person that called me, I thought it was like a joke. Like, not a joke. I thought it was like a trick question or something. I'm like,
yeah.
Are you supposed to be offering me this? Like, I'm so confused. Like, and like, but the thing is that like, you know, like in Toronto, the industry, once again, it's so small. Everybody knows everybody. And people work together. Like, you don't even realize how people work together. And so it was technically my boss at MLSE asking me if I'd be interested in that job because they were interested in me. And I was like, absolutely. So yes. And then she's like, okay, well, take some time to think. I'm like, no, the answer is yes. I'm like, are you sure? No. She's like, okay. She's like, I'm going to call you again in like 3 days.
Yes.
And I'm like, I'm telling you, my answer is not going to change. The answer is yes, but okay, you can still call me. Like
3 days later, hey, yeah, yes. First, picks up the phone, yes.
Yeah, and so that's how that jump happened. Literally, the domino effect was like boom, 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 boom. Like literally, like
one New thing York, led to another.
Exactly, New York Summer League, CBL award show, FIBA, like thing. It just happened.
Wow,
crazy.
And okay, so wow, that's like a whole like it that just kind of shows that like. Everything you did previously set you up for success now, and every risk you took, every no, if you said didn't say no to a few things, you might not be here. If you didn't say yes, you know what I mean? Like everything you did like led you to that one moment to like just picking up the phone and being like yes, right?
Yeah.
What was the so you just finished your first year as a sideline reporter?
Yeah.
82 games with the Raptors. Woo! Or you do half the games because of Sportsnet TSN?
So I actually do 82 because of a secondary contract I have with MLSE.
Okay.
But 41 of them is with Sportsnet, like for sure, like is a Sportsnet game. And then the other 41 that I'm not on, like, because it's a TSN game, I'm still there because I do all the scrum reporting.
Yeah.
So I, like, hold the mic up to the
You're in the scrums. You're getting the
And I'm talking sound. To yeah, them. Yeah. And sometimes there's markets so where there's there, not a whole lot of reporters.
Yeah, of course.
So they need me there, basically.
So how was your first season? Give me the lowdown.
Yeah, it was super cool.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. Learned a lot, that's for sure. Like a
lot of travel.
It was a lot of travel. I was really tired at times, but I think what just keeps you going is just literally your passion. You're doing your dream job. Yeah. Like, and it doesn't matter how much you stumble or fall or like whatever, like you just pick yourself back up and you're like, I'm talking about basketball today. Yeah. Okay. Like I'm getting paid to talk about the sport that I actually like love.
I reference this, but like what you're telling me reminds me that like what we do is like for a living is like, we love what our job is.
Yeah.
Like I think like the second episode of this podcast, I had Taylor from the Leafs on it. And he was just like, oh yeah, like I'm out with my buddies and it's just like they're like complaining about them working like at a bank or whatever, like at a firm, and they're like, how was your day at work? And he's like, oh, this player tore his fucking ACL. And like, that's the worst thing that happened to you.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's crazy to think that you get to do that, and like that's your reality, isn't sitting at a desk crunching numbers.
Yeah.
You get to go travel the world, work with all these world-class athletes, meet incredible people.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a cool experience. Give me the day in the life. Give me like a typical, you know, give me a week.
Like a game. Oh, yeah, I was gonna say, like,
give me a week with like a road trip in there.
Oh, what's it like? Okay. Let's start the week off with a home game. Let's say the home game is not even like a sports game. Let's say it's a TSN game. So you still go to the practice because I'm like, I want to think about like what my next game is. So even if it's a TSN game on the Monday and maybe it's a back to back, so maybe Tuesday it's a Sportsnet game. So you're still going to practice on the Sunday. Because that's the other thing. Weekends are just regular days. Yeah. Like,
you have no weekends.
There's no weekends. Like, yeah. So say they practice on the Sunday. So you're going to that practice because you're going to start to think about collecting stories for that Tuesday game. And then Monday will happen. You want to determine like what's the most prevalent thing that happened on Monday that's going to affect your stories on Tuesday. So say they lost to the Bulls or something like that, right? And they play Miami next. So we know the Miami's a really tough team and stuff like that. So like, okay, the story's probably going to be somewhere around like, how can we bounce back? And like, hey, how are you going to guard like Bam Adebayo when it was hard to contain this other player? Like, you know,
you're developing what you were going to talk about when it changes.
So much prep work before your own game happens. And then let's say your own game happens. It's back to back, so they wouldn't have a shoot around. But if it wasn't a back to back, then they would have a shoot around. So you're going there first thing in the morning,
talking to the players,
coaches, anybody that you need. Going back home, writing up notes from what you talked about, and that those notes are going to form your stories for the game that night. There's a very quick turnaround because you also have to coordinate with your producer, and usually you coordinate with the producer before shoot around so that you guys are on the same page on what you guys want to get. But then if your producer trusts you enough, like you just go and you just know what you're going to get. And then afterwards you go to your producer after shoot around, after your notes are typed up, you tell him, hey, I have this, this, and this tonight. Okay, great. Let's lead with this. And then you go from there to the game. And you always get to the game about like 3 hours early. So now, like, hopefully you got a luncheon in between that time. They also have a media meal there, so that's not bad. But you go to the game. There's a pregame scrum with the coach. And if you didn't get anything before or if breaking news happened, hey, we acquired Jakob Poeltl. Like, you gotta, like, now you're, that's probably your, scrap everything you just did for the past
Something
3 days.
Happens. Chuck it. We're starting all over again.
We're starting in, like, oh, big story is we acquired Jakob Poeltl, you know? And so that's, now you gotta get a soundbite with Jakob, or you gotta get a soundbite from the coach talking about what Jakob brings. And then, say you have a game on Thursday. So your Tuesday was your game for Sportsnet, and your next game is gonna be on Thursday, or you're playing Milwaukee. You are going to leave potentially Tuesday night after the game. So you might have had to pack a suitcase and bring it to the arena because you're going to leave straight from the arena, straight to the airport, or you're going to leave first thing Wednesday morning. Mm-hmm. Or they're going to have a practice Wednesday morning, and then they're going to then you're going to catch the flight right after. So it's a lot of like back to back to back to back.
And then you're on a plane for X amount of hours. You check in your hotel.
Yep.
You get barely enough time to prep your story for the next day.
Yes.
You sleep, wake up, do the whole thing all over again in a different city.
Exactly.
Maybe a different time zone.
Yeah.
And then it keeps going and going.
Yes. But like, so that's like the grind of it that people don't understand. And like, like social life. I've heard of that. Like, you know, like you literally stop talking to a lot of your personal, like close friends.
You and I had had times last year we didn't talk
for like a month or two.
and then it's like, oh, it's playoffs. I got to go. And like,
yeah,
but like, that's just part of the gig too. It is just like, I mean, I want to get into it. You talk about the grind, and I think the misconception is you work in sports. Oh my God, you get to travel. You get to talk to Pascal Siakam every day, and LeBron James is over there. And like, but like, people don't know that like this, no matter whether you're on TV or like myself, like the Stanley Cup final, like I just got back yesterday. I'm traveling again Wednesday. I'm probably not going to be home for 2 weeks. Like, they don't factor in that like this is exhausting and it's not all glitz and glamour. Give me a little bit of like, what is, we talked, obviously we can assume all the fun things you do. You get to meet the players, work with them, you know, get to go to all these cool cities, whatever. What are the hard parts about it? What are the things people don't see? What's like not on the Instagram, right? Tell me something.
Yeah, missing Christmas. Like, that's kind of like a, I was lucky enough this year to have a Christmas for 24 hours. I was almost going to miss it because we almost got snowed in Cleveland. So it wasn't safe to fly. But anyways, but like and everybody in my broadcast team, they're like, cherish the fact that you have 24 hours to have Christmas, because 9 times out of 10, you will not have Christmas. Like, this was a really rare year. And I was like, wow, okay. So that's a tough part. Yeah, like not seeing your friends for 2 weeks. Also, like, The road can be lonely, because like, kind of like, you know, if you don't feel like drinking or like, you know, going out that much or that often, or if you don't know anybody in the city that you're in, you're literally just in your room. Like, I go for walks, but like, as a woman, it's not always safe to walk at night or something like that, you know? So like, and that's one thing that's, you gotta be super aware about, because also you're in a different country at the same time, right? Like, I also had to, like, there's a lot of paperwork things that you fall behind on sometimes too. I had to like make sure that I had a bank card that was good to translate to like the States. And so like my visa was like a visa card that like wasn't going to give me crap on rates, basically, to the conversion. And then like I had to renew my health card, and like it was like, where was the time? Because like I only had 3 days in Canada, and then I had to go back on a road trip, you know, like where did the time go? So it's just like, yeah, time management, and just like you just don't see your family. Long story short, like literally, like I was laughing because I have a twin sister that plays pro overseas, as you know, and she's never home. But the funny thing is, like, at the end of April, I went back home for the first time since Christmas, and my parents live 45 minutes away from me. It's not like they live super far. Like, so I went back home for the first time since Christmas in April. My sister was home, and I looked at my sister. I'm like, it feels like I saw you yesterday, because the last time I was here, like, literally you were here. Mm-hmm. So, but you would never guess that you went off to go play in Sweden for 6 months.
Because I wasn't here. Because
I wasn't here either. So it's kind of like the same thing. It's a weird way of cutting it. So like, that's kind of like the hardest parts. I think a little bit of like loneliness at times, not going to lie. Like,
it's mentally exhausting.
Yeah, it's mentally exhausting. Mm. You get a little isolated in your room if you're, especially in like, you know, what's there to do in Milwaukee, like outside of like playing like a good basketball game at that night. But like, you know, get coffee and then Netflix, I guess, but or whatever you want to do. But yeah, that's pretty much the sum of it. But yeah, luckily if you have friends in those markets, and I think that comes with time as well. Like, you just meet people in the industry, meet other reporters, you can go out for like dinner and drinks with them or whatever. But like, that's like, but in the initial stages, it's just a little like, oh, okay.
And it doesn't stop. It's not like the summer comes and you're like free for a few months. Like, cause then you have summer league, and then you have other things. Like, you're doing all this surrounding work. Switching gears here, because obviously we're saying like, oh, it's tough, but it's a lot of fun. We love what we do. What's the coolest experience that you've had so far in your career? Person you've met, person you've interviewed, situation you've found yourself in? I mean, we talked about J. Cole, but like, other than J. Cole, like, what is the coolest thing you've done so far since being at Sportsnet as an on-air reporter?
Oh man, I feel like every day is so cool. Like, honestly, I don't take any day for granted whatsoever. I think every day is legit, like, so fun. The thing that kind of like immediately pops to mind, and this is less of a personal thing, and maybe more of like a, I just get really happy when people do well, and I see people do well, is like, so two moments really stick out. One, like covering Delano Banton's career high, right? Like, Delano didn't get a whole lot of minutes this past season, and like, that's, he's just developing, but like seeing him drop 27 points against Detroit, and then me having to interview him, and this is a guy that I covered almost like daily at the 905 level the year before.
You kind of grew with him.
Definitely felt like I grew with him, so to see him succeed, like, it was like, I was like, oh, ear to ear, like smiling for him. And so then I like walk off interview. I say, hey, Delano, like, let's do this. And we've done a million walk offs together in the 905. So that's probably like the moment that sticks out the most to me right now. But yeah, other than that, like, you know, I also covered like when Fred had a career high in assists. So like in a, like a Raptors franchise record in like 20 assists in a game. So that was cool too. Like being like, wow, I just covered like a,
like the milestones, a record. Yeah. The achievements. That's what you remember.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not even my own. Like it's like literally for other people. Like, yeah, and yeah, I just yeah. get to help like
tell the
amplify
story.
It. Yeah.
It's all goes back to that thing about yeah. storytelling. One thing I want to touch on, and I think it's like relevant to whether you are a content creator with a camera or you are a sideline reporter, on-air personality, you obviously develop relationships with these players. Mm-hmm. And I think people misunderestimate how important that is to actually like be on good terms with them, see them as people, not just basketball players, because like you see them every day. And like, I get it when I worked with teams in particular, like when I worked with like, you know, the Ryerson basketball teams, or when I was like with the Argos, like getting to know the players benefits you so much, but like, mm-hmm. there's like, cause there's a mutual understanding. How important is it for you as a storyteller to develop personable relationship with these guys and like get along with them and not, cause I mean, I feel like there is some stigma about guys not wanting to talk to media. Mm-hmm. How important is it for you to develop those relationships with the athletes as a storyteller?
Yeah, I think it's so important, because if you want to tell stories, they're going to have to give you a nugget. Like they're going to have to give you something to work with. You can't just make up or fabricate stories. Like you have to use their words, even if you're just like paraphrasing, but you still have to like, you have to like talk to me. It's just like building any sort of friendship. Like you talk to a stranger, they're not going to tell you about any details of their day. Mm-hmm. They're going to tell you like, yeah, my day was good. You know, like, but if you get to know them a bit better, like, oh, okay, well, like, why was it good? Like, oh, well, you know, I kind of like, I learned a new skill. I'm getting better at my left hook, because like, that was actually an area of weakness before for me. But now I feel like I'm like, oh, no way. So now they're kind of like slowly opening up about basketball related things. Yeah. And I think it's like, and like we talk about like looking at your peers eye to eye, like you got to look at the athletes eye to eye. Cause like for me, I see it as I'm here to help you. I'm here to help tell your story. I'm also here to tell a story to the masses, because they don't get to hear from you like as personally, I guess, as other people may have. So anyways, it's just, no, you have to be able to build a foundation of trust with athletes, and like, you know, use your own like skills to like decipher like what's information that's relevant, what's not relevant, and also do your, you know, your broadcast
team. And it only benefits you at the exactly. end to have this relationship, because the better information, better conversations exactly. you can have with them, the better your stories end up being, and the better like hits you're doing and whatnot.
Exactly.
Right? Gotcha. We're gonna pivot here from the Raptors. I want to talk a little bit about Swish, which yeah. is the show you did with the WNBA, for the WNBA, and you're still doing it. Give me a little bit of background, because that's kind of like your baby. That's like your yeah. side hustle. That's kind of like your happy corner in the world, apart from just being on television. Give the audience a little bit of background on it and kind of where it's at right now and why that's an important project for you.
Yeah, this is what we talk about like creating our own opportunities, right? I, as a women's basketball player myself, like former, there just wasn't any women's basketball content on TV, period. Like, end of story. Like, that's just like people didn't see the value in it or something, mm-hmm. or I don't know what the real case was in terms of, well, there's many cases, too much to get into right now. But for me, I'm like, let me be a part of the solution. Let me see if I could do something here. And so the WNBA draft was coming up. This was like 3 years ago now. And I was a host producer at MLSE. But nobody was doing anything in terms of coverage for the WNBA draft. So I was like, I'm just going to go on my own Instagram and I'm going to make an Instagram story about the top 5 prospects that you should be watching for this draft to see where they're going to get drafted, and to make it more digestible for audiences who are unaware of the women's basketball game as much. I'm going to do NBA comparisons stylistically. So obviously you can get into like, well, different athleticism, but stylistically you can see similarities in men and women who play the game, like just period. So I did that, and that Instagram story did really well, and it's crazy. So I was like, oh, okay, well, let me just take this whole thing and let me just present it to my boss at MLSE. And I did, and he loved it. And he's like, okay, well, we got to do something. I was like, okay, cool. And then like nothing happened, you know? And then I talked to my mentor, like, who was also a producer at MLSE. I said, Dwayne, like, I want to like do something with this. And he's like, absolutely. And then, so him and I came up with another idea, kind of a spinoff of that Instagram story that inspired it, came up with a show called In the Kitchen, playing off the fact that they always say women should belong in the kitchen.
Yeah, a little tongue in cheek.
A little cheeky. Uh-huh. And then where we would interview like WNBA players, get their favorite meals.
I actually had no idea that was like the original name for the show. That's amazing.
Yeah. Get their, like, I'd be making their favorite meals while I'm in the kitchen, but I'm also interviewing them to get to know their story better.
Okay, cool.
So,
And that spun
into like Swish. So I had like a blob of approvals and stuff like that, whatever, it did well. And then that turned into a WNBA draft show, like an actual draft show the following year that we actually used on the network instead of just my Instagram story. And then that did well, went all the way up to like the CMO. And she's like, yeah, this is amazing. Let's do a WNBA show. So that was all basically the big long pitch of getting a WNBA show on air. And now Swish has done like very well. Like I've run into people that like be like, oh, I watch Swish. I'm like, really? Like you never think that people watch your work. Yeah, what they do and they know. So that's kind of how it all came about. And yeah, Swish is definitely my like love child. Like it's definitely like my baby. Like three course conversation is as well. But that's those two are like right up there for me.
And where are you hoping to take the show moving forward? You're in season three now. It's one of the only like shows on the WNBA that kind of concurrently gets run. Mm-hmm. What's the big picture for it? Where do you want to see it go down the line?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, I think because it's such a great like piece of content and the fact that like just there's not really any of it of its kind out there right now. So I think the big thing for me is like, let's just get it as much exposure as we possibly can. If that means social media, if that means, different sponsorship opportunities with other like people who are interested in investing, like that would be great too. So that's kind of like where the next step I'd see Swish going.
Gotcha. So you're talking about getting eyes on it because it's something that doesn't normally get visibility. Mm-hmm. Obviously being a female in sports, specifically a Black female, I know you're very strong on like wanting to be visible to younger girls and people who want to do what you do one day. What's like one piece of advice you'd give to like younger Black girls or just individuals who want to get to where you're at and like are inspired by you? What's one message you'd want to give to them?
Oh, I'd say keep going.
Yeah.
Just because it's a long road and it's not always a friendly road, but you can definitely achieve whatever it is you want to do, like whether it's sports or not, mm-hmm. You can definitely be the first of your kind. Like you could be the first person that looks like yourself in a space and just like take up space and hold that space mm-hmm. And make it uncomfortable for everybody else that you're in that space. Because you deserve to be in that space and it shouldn't be uncomfortable. And the funny thing about it is that when you hold yourself in a way that like, you know, you belong here, everybody else is like, okay.
Like acting like you've been there before. Exactly. It's like that's like what it is, exactly what it is. It's
exactly.
Like act like you've been there before and no one's gonna question it.
Exactly.
Do you ever think about the fact that like you're trailblazing in your own right? You ever think about that? Like you're kind of moving, like especially in Canada too. Like there's not like there are not many people like you doing this mm-hmm. and like pushing forward. So like in a way, like I'm sure there are little girls who see you on TV and like one day want to do what you do because of what you're doing now. So it's just something to think about. But like it's crazy also to think, and this is kind of where I'm going to segue to one of the last things I want to ask you is when you were, let's like go all the way back to like 16-year-old Sav, 16. And you were like coming into high school, I want to tell stories, whatever. What advice would you give to the younger version of yourself? Knowing now everything you've gone through.
Yeah.
In every different girl, what's like the biggest piece of advice you'd give yourself?
It's not too late to become a doctor.
Don't do sports.
No, I wouldn't say that. No, become no. A doctor.
marry rich.
That's, hey, so the sound advice. But it goes for both genders too. It goes
both ways. Not just... Again, another thing Taylor said in the first episode. Marry rich.
Yeah, literally.
You don't make a lot of money in this industry.
Literally, a lot of people who are in the creative industry, they actually usually have a partner that has like a good normal job.
And this is
a non-crazy
job. This is completely gone from how I got my career to this is how I'm going to sustain myself, my partner.
Yeah, literally. No. Yes, but no.
But seriously, okay. What's like the one piece of advice you'd give to younger you?
One piece of advice I would give to younger me would be, stop doubting yourself. Don't doubt yourself. Like, trust your instincts. Trust that you know that, like, you'll be okay. Like, you will be okay. And you'll figure it out. Like that's part of trusting your instincts. That's like, and like, obviously, like, I could say work hard, but like 16-year-old Sal was already working hard. Like, I was a bit of like an academic in terms of I love school. And so, but yeah, I would say like, just like, everything will be okay. Just keep working hard, trust your instincts, and like, just like, keep going.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Kind of building on that, just because this is also something I want to ask, and just kind of lines up with that. What was like the biggest challenge you faced so far in your career? And how did you kind of overcome it? Because like, again, you and I like offline have talked at length of like the shit we deal with people we work with who maybe we don't get along with, or being underestimated or undersold because of who you are or what you look like or what you bring to the table. What's like the biggest challenge you faced as a, you know, in your own right? And how did you overcome it?
Yeah,
because I think that's also, sorry to cut you off. No. That's like also another, like, I usually ask what's one thing you, what advice you'd give to like a younger creative? You kind of just gave one, but like, you know, in the number of challenges you face in your career, like what's the biggest one and how did you overcome it? Because I think people can learn from that.
Yeah, that's a really great question, because I feel like there's so many mini challenges in terms of like, we talked about schedules, like you're not going to get sleep, you're not going to do this. But like, I think also just like the fact that, especially in my shoes, in my skin, like you are a Black woman, you will be perceived differently, you know, and like understanding that. And what does that mean? You know, like, so there's times in my career where I've been more conscious and felt like I've had to adjust because I don't want to come off as an angry Black woman. There is a trope. And there was a situation where I had to question somebody. I had to almost like call them out a little bit and be like, am I angry right now? Or am I being direct? And I wasn't like
a big difference.
Yeah. Too. And then literally that stopped that, like that conversation, like it stopped in its tracks basically when I said that. And then we ended up having another conversation later, and he was very apologetic because he's like, when you said that, I had to really check myself. And I appreciate the fact that he
like responded,
because he wasn't used to somebody like me, a woman, being able to be vocal and express what she needs to succeed in whatever project that we're working on and stuff like that. And so there's been situations like that. And sometimes it's not as bluntly, sometimes it's not as like, as forward as that. Sometimes it's very subtle and very subconscious and like inherent biases.
You will notice if you wouldn't look for it.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're like, well, why is this person treating me like, you know, it's like, well, it could be because of this, but you don't want it to believe but sometimes it is. And like accepting that and just understanding that has nothing to do with you and everything to do with like, well, the society that we are in.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, don't let that be a deterrent. Once again, hold space, take up space, make people uncomfortable, be direct, be clear, be honest, be disruptive. Like, don't follow the pattern. Like,
noticed in your careers, like every level you've been at, you've like, kick the door down and be like, okay, we're fucking changing things around here, bitch.
New management.
I'm running the show and I want everyone to have fun. But this is, but like, that's that. And I think that's our generation. Like, you know, in terms of like being under 30 years old, like this younger generation of people coming into the industry, like a lot of us are like changing that mindset of like, I know we've done things like this for 30 years. But bitch, it's 2023. Kick the door down. Like, and you're right. Like, it is like kind of changing, making people feel uncomfortable in order to make that change that you want to see.
And that's like, that's the beautiful thing about diverse perspectives, and the quality that diversity brings into a workplace is that you get to challenge norms that you're doing, and you get to create new systems that are potentially more efficient or more friendly to like a greater spectrum of people, basically, right? And so that's like the kind of like the cool thing when you have diverse voices at the table.
That's awesome. No, I love that you kind of, in your answer there, took the challenge and completely like, this was the challenge I faced, but this is exactly how I like fixed it with being that disruptive person in the most positive way. You know what I mean? You're going in there to do your job. You're just trying to change the aspect a little bit and show people that like, you know, things are changing, but they don't have to like, it's changing for the right reasons, not for the wrong reasons. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, I'm going to kind of start bringing it all together here, wrapping up, because I appreciate having you on here. I don't want to take up any more of your time. Is there anything else you want to add? Any other pieces of advice? Any other thing you want to throw in here? This is your time to shine. What are you, actually, let me ask you, What are you going to be up to in the next little bit? What's Sav's next couple months looking forward to? You mentioned you were going on vacation, taking some time for yourself. What are you doing over the next little? What can we expect from you in the next few months?
Yep. So some vacation time for sure. Literally just mentally resting. I'm also still doing Swish. So booking guests and I have producer, a great team of producers, but I also definitely to have a bit more to say. Exactly. So I'm not just like, hey, just a face for the camera. I'm actually like,
you want to develop the story. Exactly. Yes.
And I feel like even that will help me prepare for next season to be a better reporter. Mm-hmm. I'm also still working with a talent coach to literally look back at my work and to see where I can improve. I'm going to be doing some screen tests and stuff this summer to reps.
It's like being in the gym. Except
literally,
it's like
putting up shots.
Yeah.
I'm going to be covering Global Jam. So I'm really excited for that. That's kind of the meat and potatoes. And then I'm hoping to make my way to Vegas for Summer League again this year as well.
Nice.
Yeah.
So it's a packed summer, but you're taking time for yourself. It's like about...
Yeah. And then August is probably going to be a bit on the more quieter side.
Yeah,
so.
Taking some time for balance.
Before the storm.
Exactly. and the TikTok, which we didn't really talk about. Yeah, but it's okay. I will also say I leave everything for Saber Instagram, her TikTok, which she gives charisma tips. That's kind of your brand on TikTok, but you're changing it up. But I will leave all of her socials down in the description below. Thank you for taking the time for doing this. I appreciate you and your busy schedule and me fitting.
Surprised. If you're fitting me in.
I'm glad you're in playoff finals mode. I'm more glad we found time to meet in the middle and do it because we've been talking about this for months.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add? I'll just leave the.
No, man. Just like.
Where can the people find you? Just what's your socials? I know I'll put it down there, but where can they find you?
Okay, so Instagram and Twitter, Sav Hamilton 11. That's for both of those. And then TikTok, Savannah, Savanna, no H. And then Hamilton.
I've written it with an H before. I need to remember not to do that.
It's okay. You get a pass.
Okay.
Savannah Hamilton 11 for TikTok.
All right. Beautiful. Guys, make sure to follow her. Give her some love. Thank you again. That wraps up episode number 8 of the Sports Creative Showcase. Everything will be down in the description below. If you guys are watching this will be out a week before the audio episode. And that does it. Thank you guys so much for listening. And we'll catch you guys in the next one. Peace.